I'm always embarrassed to be introduced, and maybe I can live long enough to introduce Harry one of these days. This is a most difficult subject indeed, and I recognize that this series of lectures are dealing with some difficult subjects. The home and the ideal is a wonderful place to be raised in, yet few of us have the opportunity or experience of being raised in an ideal home. And some of the things that are going to be talked about this week are things that would test our faith and help us draw closer to God or lose our faith. Connie Adams is going to be speaking on the loss of a spouse. Overcoming an abusive parent by Sandy Willis. To recognize the pain of a wayward child by Melvin Curry. And overcoming the ungodly home by Ron Halbrook. These are things that touch us in an innermost being as we try to rise to God's ideal. This is the most painful subject, and I want to preface what I say by saying that we have never lost our faith in God because of these adversities. I believe that the real enemy is Satan. He always has been our real enemy. We never confuse what Satan has done to us with God doing that kind of thing, because our God is a merciful God. And to be able to have the kind of faith that goes through those kinds of adversities that kind of faith is what really we search for and read our Bibles for and determine to go the right way. The death of a child is an intensely personal and painful experience. And I hear sometimes people comparing which is the worst kind of a death. Loss of a wife, loss of a parent, loss of a child. Which is worse? And it's folly to try to compare that, because each of its own loss is something that is so intensely personal that you don't feel perhaps what others have felt about that. All death is painful and carries its own particular tragedies and losses. So I would never argue with someone that my loss is greater than yours. I think those things simply do not apply. We all share in the fact that it is appointed unto man once to die, and then comes the judgment. Hebrews 9:27. The uniqueness of the loss of a child is that it's out of season. We who are parents expect to outlive our children. And when that does not happen, it is out of season. It happened the wrong way. And because of that, it brings its own unique ideas and tragedies with that. And when death interrupts its natural progression, it sets in motion a series of emotional roller coasters. We feel, of course, grief. We feel the loss of pain, the pain of loss. There's a certain amount of horror connected to it as well. And I must admit, a great deal of anger when you think about the anger that we had toward the fact of death. And then the confusion and denial and the idea that this really didn't happen to me. And the struggle to deal with all of that is something that is an ever-present thing. It's normal, I say, to lose a parent who's aged and who's come to their natural way of life. But there's something just incredible about the loss of a child, and I hope and pray that we can learn something from it as we think about it this morning. Because of that intensely personal aspect of the loss of a child, it brings difficulty in speaking about it, because I do not want anyone to think that this is an appeal for sympathy or something of that nature. It's not to be construed as an appeal for sympathy. Never appropriate to leverage an event that happens in your life in order to get someone to think that about you. But in the telling of life tragedies, sometimes there are things to learn. And when we look at someone else, we can learn those kinds of things, and I truly hope that we can learn some things from this as well. My wife and I, Pauline, have talked about this, whether or not we speak of him publicly or in some way like that, and we've agreed that if it can help, if it be some way that we can guide someone through that kind of intensely painful experience, that perhaps it will focus, as this lecture is intended to do, focus on the family and strengthen those who might become weak, because we've observed so many becoming weak during the process, to uplift those that might be discouraged, and to point each one to the wisdom of God's Word to meet the stresses of life and death. So it's in this vein that I speak of something that's so very personal. And yet the Bible uses personal experience sometimes to teach lessons. And as we see the lessons in the Word of God, we understand how these things can become, though it's personal, though it's intensely private, God has used those things in a public way to bring about lessons that we sorely need. For example, I've always been impressed with Hosea. Now, Hosea married Gomer. Gomer was not what we would call a good woman at all. And Hosea and Gomer went through separations and remarriage and things that would test the patience of someone. And in the telling of Hosea's life, so publicly, about what had to be intensely painful in his life, we learned the lesson of how God loves His children. And the lesson that came from Hosea was that God loves us even when we're unfaithful and will do those things to bring us back home again. Hosea is a good lesson, and it's a private lesson, and yet it was made public for the reason of learning those kinds of things. Joseph had to endure a lot of things with his own brothers. I'm so impressed with the story of Joseph as he dwelt alone dealing with some of his problems. And the fact that when he later saw his brothers and came face to face with those who had so sorely mistreated him, that he could recognize that God was doing something in me and with me above and beyond my personal feelings about this. And I believe that God can do that in your life and my life today. I'm a strong believer in the providence of God. Don't always explain it, don't always understand it, but I fully believe that God is in our lives and we walk under His great hand. So Hosea is a good lesson. Joseph is a good lesson. David is a good lesson. When you think about David being such a godly man, yet falling in temptation to lust and doing what he did, something that he hoped would be private and wasn't private at all because the prophet pointed him out and said, "Thou art the man." We think of David as well as we think about his loss of his son Absalom. And I think there are no sadder words in all the Bible than the weeping of this great man as he recognized that Absalom was finally dead. He said in 2 Samuel 18, "O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I died in your place. O Absalom, my son," went weeping across the gates as he recognized his son was gone. Those are sad times and things to bring tears to the eyes. But as others have been used by God in some way to let their private pain be made public, it's helped us to understand that we all go through these kinds of things and these kinds of times, and that we must not be able to give up on that. I want to talk briefly about Tommy. My wife and I, as Harry said, had three children, two boys and a girl. Our middle child, Tommy Jr., died in 1981 at the age of 23 in a motorcycle accident. It's always awkward to reply to the question, "How many children did you have?" If we say two, because we have two remaining, it seems disloyal because we don't want Tommy to be forgotten. If we say three, then someone says, "Where do they live?" And you have the additional awkwardness of explaining why one of them is gone. Yet at the same time, through that awkwardness, we want to remember Tommy because of the life he lived and because of being with us. And after 25 years of being from the time of his death, there are still moments when a certain song at church or something will reach out and grab you in an unexpected way, and a memory will hit you unexpectedly. And though the scars, through God's grace, have been healed to a large degree, there are still times when we don't escape the memories of his short life and what he meant to us and how he passed away from this life. And we live our lives as normally as possible. We want to go on doing the things that we have to do. But as many of you probably can testify, there's a scar on our heart that'll never go away. It's there, it's a reality, and we deal with it. And we deal with it sometimes when we have holidays, and we deal with it sometimes when we have our memories, and when we have our family gatherings. And Tommy's not gone from us in our memory, and yet at the same time we recognize that there's an inevitability to the fact that he is gone. We never wanted our children to have motorcycles because of the inherent danger that is true with all of that. But after he married, Tommy finally decided to fulfill a dream and get his motorcycle, and he purchased his own. In late October of 1981, just before Halloween, of course this always changes our expectation of holidays, he collided with a truck and was comatose in the hospital for 3.5 weeks. During that time, we spent every single day by his side, sometimes hours, and would speak with him and pray with him and read the scriptures to him. As the doctor said, the hearing is the last thing to go. And Tommy was not right with God as he had his accident. And we wanted to penetrate his mind. We wanted to be able to talk to him and bring him to penitence if that was at all possible. And we don't know what happened. We don't understand what went on in his mind because he was not able to recover from that. To this day, we hope that he was able to hear. To this day, we hope that he is able to respond, was able to respond to that. And in some way, make a correction in his mind about how he had forsaken the Lord. And when you have those things, we recognize, brethren, there's something worse than the physical loss of a child. I know in the body of Christ, there have been occasions when many, many brethren have lost their children back to the world. On one occasion, I looked at a congregation where I'd worked, and 75% of the young people of that church had been lost to the cause of Christ. There have been many times that I've preached a lesson on home and family when I've seen tears in the audience because I recognize that they're going through difficult times. And one of the articles that I've written has been put into a tract is Letters to Our Children. And I've had good response to that. In fact, that sometimes people take that tract and send it to their children who are unfaithful. I advise you to do that. Reach out to them. Get that tract and send it to your children. And as you recognize that there is a spiritual loss that's so much worse than a physical loss, I cannot describe the physical loss of a child. But it's beyond me to even describe the spiritual loss of a child, and I know that many have experienced that as well. At the same time, they are feelings that cannot be expressed, that the human voice cannot say, that we believe God understands, and He's a merciful God. He will judge righteously, and I leave all that in God's hands. There are many untold moments about Tommy's life that will be leave unsaid. He was buried the day after Thanksgiving. That again affects our view of holidays. And while the knowledge of his passing is always with us, time has worked its wonders, and God has helped us in so many ways that it's not as sharp as it once was. And there's such a wonderful way that God has with time that is able to bring to a less sharpness the pain of loss and the dealings with those kinds of things. To those of you who might be having the loss of children in a spiritual way, I would say again, give God time. Let Him heal you and let Him reach out to you in such a way that you can be healed from that process. And as you have been healed and get to a better plateau of faith, you'll be able perhaps to reach out to others as well. A lot of things that I learned from Tommy's death, that perhaps by this lesson I can pass along to you and recognize that out of those painful experiences, we can indeed, like Hosea and Joseph and David, learn some good lessons. First of all, I learned that some things just have to be experienced. You just cannot escape them. You cannot run away from them. You cannot pretend in your mind they don't happen. They just happen. And you must bear them. To illustrate that, I saw one time in Texas an old cow standing out in the pasture during a hailstorm, a sleet storm. And there was no tree to get under. There was no barn to get into. And the cow just had to stand there, hump its back, and take the weather until the storm passed. And I felt that way in moments of my life when I feel like no one can take this away from me. No one can add anything to really make it stop happening. You just have to take it until it passes. But it will pass. There will be a better day. And I came to understand that as well. We have to recognize that life is not all roses. We're long gone from the Garden of Eden. There are things that happen to us that we must endure. And life can be exceedingly cruel sometimes. This is not God's fault. I see all times in the printed press and sometimes among denominational people and even among brethren that they blame God for these kinds of things, and that's an unfair thing to do. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 12 says, "Woe to the earth, because the devil has come down full of wrath." It's very true that the devil is among us today. And I'm never confused about where these troubles come from. Please do not put these things at the feet of God. God does not inflict such pain upon you. The devil does those kinds of things. I believe there is a sense of hate and love that must exist in all of our lives. To the degree that you love God, I believe to the same degree you have to hate the devil. I don't believe you can be a whole Christian without having hate in your system for what the devil has done. When tragedy comes into your life, hate the devil for what he's done. Recognize the source of all the evil and never blame God. He's always there He's always able to reach out to us and put us under the hand of safety, and we have to recognize that it's something that God only can do. So we've learned that, and we have to continue learning that and working with God as He gives us these wonderful blessings. We learned also that God will work His grace through other Christians. We hear sometimes, why doesn't God do something? When in fact God is doing so many things in ways that we don't understand. And that's true sometimes through other Christians. During the days that Tommy was in the hospital in that dreadful coma, there'd be days when we'd be so intense in hoping he would recover that we would forget to eat. And we'd come home in the evening when they shut down the emergency room and the intensive care unit, and we'd be hungry, and there'd be warm food on the table because the sisters of the church had brought in meals for us. We'd forgotten to eat, and yet there was food. Someone would come in and help us in ways in cleaning the house. The brethren where I preached at that time was Westside in Fort Worth, and they were all that Christians should have been. Someone preached in my place. Someone took care of things that I couldn't even begin to do. And through that I began to learn that God was working with me, but He was working through my brethren. And that's exactly what God wants you to do. When someone has tragedy in their lives, reach out to them. God may be working through you. Whether you wash dishes or wash clothes or cook some food or just in some way give sympathy and prayer, then you'll be helping because God is working through you. One thing I had to learn that's very difficult to learn is to receive condolences rather than give them. I've been in a lot of houses where people have been in pain and where people have died. I've watched people die and go to meet their Maker. I struggle with things to say when that happens. But I never really thought about how it would be said to me that someone would offer condolences to me. Most difficult to be able to allow brethren sometimes they don't always say the right things. And they would say something in their awkward way trying to help that would indeed hurt. But I learned that people are trying to ease the pain. And many times they're God's messengers, I fully believe, to alleviate the pain and the suffering that many times you're happening. I want to repeat again. Please distinguish between the acts of God and the acts of the devil. So many people are confused about that. I heard of a reporter in California who's lost a daughter because someone assaulted her. And someone meaning to be helpful said, well, God took her because He needed her more than you. And he said, if that's the kind of God that we're talking about, I don't want to know God. And sometimes people attribute to God things that the devil did and cause a resentment against Him. So we need to recognize that maybe a good study of the book of Job would help of the presence of the devil in our lives and the source of comfort of God in our lives. And to understand that God allows free will to operate in our lives and that we have to sometime accept the consequences of that. And so our son Tommy did not walk the walk that he had been taught. He was not living faithful at the moment that he died, so far as we know. And yet at the same time, he was choosing that kind of life. And we have to put him into the hands of God with regard to that. The risk of free moral agency is the fact that we may choose to do evil rather than good. And we have to live with those kinds of consequences. But evil is in the world because of sin, Romans chapter 3 and verse 23. And we die because of sin, Romans 6 and verse 23. And there needs to be never a moment when we blame God for the things and mistakes that we make. Also learn something else. That is, I guess you have to come to this point before you do. And that is, the devil is absolutely merciless. He didn't say, well, Tom and Pauline have suffered enough, I'll leave them alone for a while. There were 10 years during that stretch when there was a dark cloud over our house, it seemed like, and every single day of 10 solid years brought its own problems. We recalled when the phone would ring. We hated to hear the doorbell ring. There was a tendency to withdraw into yourself because of all the problems that were going on with all of that. The doctor had been telling me with Pauline's condition that she had to go into the hospital immediately, that she had cancer. He was convinced she had cancer. While Tommy was in his coma, she wouldn't agree to go into the hospital and have that surgery. And finally she yielded and decided to go in. And Tommy died and was buried on Friday. We had to put her in the hospital on Monday. And those kinds of things just went on and on. I'd been in a car wreck, had 3 back surgeries. I was waiting for her to get better when I could have my surgery. And it just went on and on. Again, I'm not saying that for sympathy. This is the way life is sometimes. You all can tell your own stories along that way. And there was never a time when I felt like, well, the devil's going to leave me alone now. He's loaded enough on me. But I learned the devil will never say, okay, I'll leave you alone for a while. He'll add to you and add to you, trying to break your will. And I've learned who my adversary is. And as we come to recognize those kinds of things, we just recognize that God is so good. The devil is so evil. There's a clear choice for the way we need to go. And we need to tell people about that. One of the things that I had to learn through this is that each member of the family has to grieve in their own particular way. We had some very close friends that lost a son who was not a Christian about a year after Tommy died. And she was the hysterical type. They were members of the church. She'd preached the gospel quite a long time. She was a hysterical type and would go into hysteria about her son's death. Her husband was the inner type that suffered quietly inside. And because they were not on the same page with regard to this suffering, they drove each other apart. They finally divorced. It's not at all unusual, I understand, from figures to see that sometimes after you lose a child, the marriage dissolves, and their marriage dissolved. She went off to California to be with her daughters. He stayed in Lubbock, Texas, and died of cancer. And it was a great tragedy to see that they were driven apart because of the grief that they couldn't handle. You have to learn, when something so intensely grieful happens to you, you support one another and let each one grieve in their own way and in their own time. And if you don't do that, then, of course, there's going to be trouble in the marriage itself. There's a time for professional help in these matters. I would not at all indicate that you shouldn't seek professional help. The family I just mentioned sought professional help, but they lost their faith. And the reason why they divorced was because they lost their faith. But I wouldn't hesitate at all to encourage someone to seek professional help. My wife and I did not. But if someone decides that they need help in getting through the process of grief, then I certainly advise them to take advantage of that. There's a wonderful group that we came to know about during that period of time called Compassionate Friends. And Compassionate Friends is sort of a voluntary self-help group. And I've given information in the text where you can look that up if you need to contact them. It's a voluntary self-help group without charge. And what they have in common is that each of them has lost a child and lost a very close relative. And thus they are compassionate with regard to talking with you. Their mission statement reads, "The mission of the Compassionate Friends is to assist families toward resolution of grief following the death of a child of any age and to provide information to help others be supportive." They really do that. They have sessions where you talk with others who've experienced that and it certainly can help you. And then there are a number of Christians, some Christians at least, who are professional, as Brother Art Adams is, who can guide you towards someone who can help you. So if you have overwhelming grief, please don't hesitate to reach out to someone who is trained to be able to help you. It will not take the place of faith, not take the place of your communication with God. But it certainly can help you in ways that others might not be able to. I believe also there is some profit for us in understanding the human emotions and what some call the process of grieving. When you look at an analytical way of the process of grieving, I want to mention some of the things that have been identified as the steps of grief. First of all is the idea of denial. I remember so well the night that we learned that Tommy had had the accident. And there is this sense, and I know it's self-preservation, the sense that it can't be happening. It's not real. I'm going to wake up and this is going to not be true. And yet that denial is always there to try to help you to get through it. And then the anger of the event. And why is this happening to me? So many times that happens, and this has been identified as one of the steps of grief. Bargaining with God or bargaining with fate. Even those who don't believe will sometimes bargain, well, if they'll just live, let them live, and then I'll be able to get through this. And I'll do better if you'll let me live. I remember
my mother talking about my father being shot accidentally during the time when he was hunting. Someone mistook him for a deer and filled his chest full of buckshot. During the surgery to save his life, he promised my mother, "If I can just live, I'll go to church with you. And if I can just live, I'll do better." Of course, he never did. It was not a very thoughtful or heartfelt promise. But that's the idea of people going through these troublesome times. And then, of course, many times it's depression. The depression over the loss, the depression over the situation, the inability of dealing with it. And depression is a very real problem that deals with us. And then finally, when you get through all these steps, the acceptance. This has happened. Now I've got to go on with my life in some way. And they've been identified as that. Well, I don't believe that death is scripted in the sense of dealing with it. I don't believe that you can say, "I'm going through this one, then I'm going to go to the next one, I'm going to the next one." I believe all these things are there. They've been mixed up. One may be shorter or longer than the other. But every stage has its own peculiarities. And we need to be able to identify those, that we at least can understand what's happening to us. One study worth mentioning has been Life with an Empty Chair, A Guide Through Grief by Dr. Roberta Timmis. Rather than five steps, as some indicate, she talked about three steps of behavior. And the first one she identified is numbness. Numbness. And truly that feeling comes over you, this mechanical functioning. You get in your car, you drive somewhere, but you don't remember driving there. Now, you do things that you have to do, but there's no memory of doing those things. It's all mechanical because you're in shock. And so this numbness sets in. Then there's this disorganization, the inability to function. You can't remember phone numbers. You can't remember what you're supposed to be doing. You can't remember where you left your keys. And grief just sweeps through your system and rearranges everything, and you're disorganized. And then there's this feeling, finally, she said, of reorganization, trying to get on with your life, putting things in order. And it takes supreme effort sometimes to do that. Some don't get through the process. And so all these things are going on. But one cannot continue in a sense of numbness. One cannot continue in a sense of disorganization if you're going to be a child of God. There are things to be done. There are people to be reached. There's life to go on with. And you recognize that and deal with it in that sense. While there's no contradiction between faith and this professional medical help, some might perceive seeking medical help as a lack of faith. I hope that you do not do that, because sometimes people need what the professional person can give. The Bible tells us that Luke was a physician, Colossians chapter 2. And Jesus is nothing if He was not the great physician. And we need to go to Him for healing as well. And so we try to do the best we can in those senses. But when you feel inadequate, brethren and friends, please go get help for that grief. I have some practical things that I think I can say would be able to help, and I'd give you those, and they're listed in the book. Don't avoid emotions or separate yourself from those who grieve. They're not any magic words to take away that pain. They just are none. You search the human vocabulary, you search the dictionary, you search your mind. There are nothing to take away that grief, that sharp sorrow that's there. But there's a lot of power in simply hugging somebody's neck. There's a lot of power in shaking a brother's hand. There's a lot of help and comfort in hugging somebody and letting the tears flow with them. We were so grateful that we had brethren come to the hospital constantly, and we would find a quiet place and have prayer together. I don't know how many times we had prayer. Some of those brethren didn't know what to say. They had no idea what to say, and we all feel that awkwardness. But as we knelt in prayer, everything that had to be said was said. And the strength that you get from that is simply beyond description, to recognize that those things can help. Saying, "I am so sorry," really is about all someone can say. But having said that sincerely, it says a lot. Don't feel like you have to talk at length with the bereaved person. Sometimes they simply cannot stand that kind of pressure. Be ready to listen if they want to talk. Sometimes providing a sympathetic shoulder for somebody to cry on has therapeutic value beyond psychiatry. And we weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. You might ask someone who's gone through a tragedy, "Do you want to talk about it?" Do you want to talk about it? If they say no, they don't want to talk about it. But if sometimes they want to talk, we don't want Tommy to be forgotten. He's part of our lives. Most of you never met him and will never meet him at all until the time in eternity is satisfied. But at the same time, we don't want Tommy to be forgotten. He was our child. He was a part of our lives. And we had his picture superimposed upon a picture of the family not long after that. He's always in our thoughts. But we go on with life as we have to be able to do what God would have us to do. Bereaved people are often disconnected from the ability to handle everyday chores. And this realization has led brethren especially to go in and just do common chores that need to be done. Wash some dishes and vacuum the floors, and wash some clothes, and run errands, and go to the store for them, replenish the pantry, and things of that nature that need to be done. And that can often be done by one of the sisters in the church, sort of saying, let's organize this, and have some kind of a schedule to follow so that they're not overwhelmed with that. I've seen that take place. The marvelous ability of ladies, please don't underestimate the power of what you do when you cook a pie or cake and take it into somebody's house. And to recognize that what a card means when you have cards. We still have a box full of cards that we received. Sometimes we take those out and look at the names of those who remembered us during that time. And sometimes when you have a tragedy like that, there's a dazing of the memory, and you don't really remember who came to the funeral, or you don't remember who came to the hospital. And it's good sometimes to sort of jot down these things if you could remember it. And I remember some people that came to the hospital. There are others that I only knew later that someone said that they were there. And I was grateful that they came and comforted by their coming. If there's one place that I felt like I failed, it was I failed in understanding Tommy's brother and sister and the grief they were going through. When someone passes away like that, think of the siblings as well. They had a terrible time. It adversely affected. We had so many people praying that Curtis and Paula just knew that Tommy was going to get better. They just had full faith that Tommy was going to get better because everybody was praying for him to get better. And he passed away. And it deeply affected their faith. Our oldest son became very bitter against God because he felt like God did that. He misunderstood. He's never gotten over that. It affected his faith. Our daughter's coming out of that pit, but at the same time, it's very confusing. And a parent can be so consumed with their own grief, they don't recognize what's happening to the others in the family. So give special attention sometimes to others in the family. Continue to remember the family after the weeks that follow. I've heard so many times widows say that they were part of a group, and then my husband died, and now I'm alone, and nobody calls me. Nobody asks me to go out and eat with them because I'm a third party. And we need to remember that after death and after the grieving process, life goes on for them, and it's changed, and they need that kind of help. Send cards. Just send cards. Send notes of condolence, and let them be assured that you're thinking about them. These are treasured, and as I said, they're reread sometimes later, and to recognize that these individuals thought about you, and sometimes just a note saying, I'm thinking about you, I'm praying for you, makes me know that somebody's lifting my name up before the throne of God, and it helps so much to know that that's being done. Please avoid saying, well, I know how you feel. Because it's so intensely personal. No grief is the same. And especially if you haven't lost a child or maybe a spouse, the loss of a child is more puzzling and enigmatic perhaps than other death. But all death is tragic, and we need to recognize that as well. Then believe in prayer. I can't tell you how good it is to be able to bow your knees and to lay these things upon God's shoulders. I don't know what people do who have these things happen to them and who do not have God. I don't know how they get through life from day to day. There is this fact that we cast our cares upon Him. The fact that He is aware of the hairs on our head. The fact that He knows every sparrow that falls to the ground. That I worship and serve the same God that Abraham did, the God that Moses did. When I pray to God, I'm praying to that same God, and the assurance that He hears. faith. Paul says in the book of Romans that we're justified by faith. We're made alive by faith. I cannot understand how people who do not have faith in God face the problems of life. Hope that some of this is sort of practical advice to you, and I hope that you never face this kind of great tragedy, that you have to have this in your life. Now, Paul and I were blessed with brethren who loved us, who prayed for us, who continued to surround us through the years, and I've known a lot of sorry people in the church. I'm sure most of you have. But I'm telling you, the good brethren that have surrounded us have made it all worthwhile. I've had to trouble as a preacher because brethren didn't want to hear the truth. But oh, when I think of the good brethren that have uplifted my hands and my heart when I preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Couldn't make it without our brethren. This kind of meeting is so wonderful because we get to know others who have the same kind of feeling. Even the preparation of this manuscript brought back painful memories. Yet at the same time, we treasure the life of Tommy and the joyful remembrances that we had. And it's our fervent prayer that if you face this kind of trial, that you may find what the Bible promises as the peace of God that passes understanding. I think I know what that means, in the sense that I can find peace of God even without knowing what is happening to Tommy, because I know the God who's taking care of him. I hope you can find that as well, and that the God of peace may be with you all your life, not only in times of trouble, but also in times of happiness. May God bless you as you face life.